song. I'd like today to turn to the book of 1 Kings, chapter 18. Book of 1 Kings, chapter 18. Save time, we'll read verses 30 through verses 40. And Elijah said unto all the people, "Come near unto me." And all the people came near unto him. And he repaired the altar of the Lord that was broken down. Elijah took 12 stones according to the number of the tribes of the sons of Jacob, on whom the word of the Lord came, saying, "Israel shall be thy name." And with the stones he built an altar in the name of the Lord. And he made a trench round about the altar as great as would contain 2 measures of seed. And he put the wood in order, cut the bullock in pieces, laid him on the wood, and said, "Fill 4 barrels of water, and pour it on the burnt sacrifice and on the wood." And he said, "Do it the second time." And they did it the second time. And he said, "Do it the third time." And they did it the third time. And the water ran round about the altar. And he filled the trench also with water. And it came to pass at the time of the offering of the evening sacrifice that Elijah the prophet came near and said, "Lord God of Abraham, Isaac, and of Israel, let it be known this day that thou art God in Israel, and that I am thy servant, and that I have done all these things at thy word. Hear me, O Lord, hear me, that this people may know that thou art the Lord God, that thou hast turned their heart back again." And the fire of the Lord fell and consumed the burnt sacrifice and the wood and the stones and the dust and licked up the water that was in the trench. When all the people saw it, they fell on their faces. And they said, "The Lord, he is the God. The Lord, he is the God." And Elijah said unto them, "Take the prophets of Baal. Let not one of them escape." And they took them, and Elijah brought them down to the brook Kishon and slew them there. Leading up to these verses, we see that King Ahab had followed the steps of his father Omri and had worshipped Baal. We see that in chapter 16, verses 31 and verse 32, how that Ahab continued to establish the religion of Baal. In chapter 17 and verse 1, we see that Elijah was sent by God to warn Ahab that this sin of making Baal worship the national religion would have some very serious and very devastating consequences, that there would be no dew nor rain for years. So the famine came. Chapter 17, it was during the famine that Elijah was miraculously sustained by God. We have record of that again in chapter 17. And then we see that God told Elijah to go and confront Ahab. And when Elijah approached Ahab, Ahab immediately blamed Elijah for the famine in the land. We see that in verse 17 of chapter 18. "And it came to pass when Ahab saw Elijah that Ahab said unto him, 'Art thou he that troubleth Israel?'" In response to that, Elijah exposed that the real reason for the famine was Ahab's sin. And we see that in verse 18. "And he answered, 'I have not troubled Israel, but thou and thy father's house, in that ye have forsaken the commandments of the Lord, and thou hast followed Balaam.'" He then made a proposal to Ahab to call all the people to from all over Israel to have them come unto Mount Carmel, call the 450 prophets of Baal, call the 400 prophets of the groves, and that's recorded in verse 19, and it is recorded in verse 20 that Ahab did this. So no doubt people came, thousands of people would have come. They would have come from across, they would have had to cross barren and withered fields to get to Mount Carmel. There no doubt were men there, there were women there, there were children who made the journey. The 450 prophets of Baal were there. And we see that Elijah stood and he immediately confronted their double-mindedness. He's talking to the people of Israel that had come to Mount Carmel. He not only confronted their double-mindedness in verse 21, he said, "How long halt ye between two opinions?" He also told them that there needed to be a clear distinction between God and Baal. And if the Lord be God, follow him, but if Baal, then follow him. We see the response of the people, and the people answered him not a word. Elijah then went on and called to their attention the fact that he was one prophet of the Lord. And here were 450 prophets of Baal. In light of such, he issued a challenge. In verses 23 and verse 24, he said, "Let them therefore give us two bullocks." He said, "I'll let the prophets of Baal choose whatever bullock they want of these two. Let them choose one bullock for themselves, cut it in pieces and lay it on wood and put no fire under. And I will dress the other bullock and lay it on wood and put no fire under. And call ye on the name of your gods, and I will call in the name of the Lord. And the God that answereth by fire, let him be God," or let him be recognized as God. "And all the people answered," now they answer, "and said, it is well spoken." In other words, this is a good idea. This is the children of Israel. So the prophets of Baal choose their bullock. They place it upon the altar. And they begin to call on the name of Baal. Verse 26 says that they called from morning even until noon, "O Baal, hear us." And then we read, "But there was no voice." There was no answer. Verse 28, "And they cried aloud and cut themselves after the manner with knives and lancets till the blood gushed out upon them." They have become desperate. And we see it came to pass when midday was past, and they prophesied until the time of the offering of the evening sacrifice, that there was neither voice nor any to answer nor any that regarded. So they prayed, they danced, they yelled, they cut themselves, they tried every ceremony that they could possibly think of, but it was all to no avail. Why? Because their gods were dead, because their gods were powerless. And then beginning with verse 30, we have the account of how Elijah offered his bullock in sacrifice, called upon God in prayer, and then notice verse 38. "Then the fire of the Lord fell." And this was a sign. This was a manifestation of God's presence. This was God's intervention. This was a manifestation of the power of God. Then the fire of the Lord fell. And that was a day and an event that would be remembered. I want to speak this morning on this very subject. Then the fire of the Lord fell. Then the fire of the Lord fell. That is our need this morning, for the fire of God to fall from heaven. I want to consider, first of all, some circumstances and the condition of the people at this time. And we want to mention five specifics concerning the circumstances, concerning the condition of the people. First of all, it was a time of sin. The worship of Baal was very, very prevalent. In the worship of Baal, adults would gather around the altars of Baal. They would sacrifice infants. You say, oh, that's terrible. It's no different today. Baal worship is alive and well today. So that's another message. But they would sacrifice infants. And then men and women would engage in sexual orgies. The whole ritual was intended to produce prosperity. Again, Baal worship is alive and well today. The whole mindset behind Baal worship is very prevalent today. It was intended to produce prosperity by prompting Baal, who was the god of fertility, to send rain for the fertility of quote unquote Mother Earth. The principal pillars of Baal worship was child sacrifice, sexual immorality, both heterosexual and homosexual, and pantheism, which is basically placing creation over the Creator. Those were the principal pillars of Baal worship. Those are the principal pillars behind humanism today. But again, we don't want to go there this morning. Now, the vast majority of the people at this time had become entangled and involved to some degree with the sin of Baal worship. I believe it's the same today. I believe the majority of those who profess to know the Lord are in some degree entangled and involved with what is behind Baal worship. You say, well, how do you know it was the majority of the people? Well, let's look at 1 Kings 19, verse 18. Yet I have left me 7,000 in Israel, all the knees which have not bowed unto Baal, and every mouth which hath not kissed him. 7,000 people! Of all the millions, 7,000 people who were not entangled in some way with Baal worship. No doubt some were more involved than others. It's not a contest today. The issue is not who is most involved in Baalism. The issue is, are you entangled in the principles of Baal worship? So it was a time of sin. It was a time of antagonism. We read in verse 4 of chapter 18 that Jezebel cut off the prophets of the Lord. That is, she had them killed. Now we know of Obadiah that he took 100 prophets and hid them in 2 caves in order to save their lives. But this was a time of hatred. It was a time of malice. It was a time of animosity and hostility toward those who stood for the truth and toward those who proclaimed the truth. It was a time of disgust toward those who believed and toward those who preached and declared the truth of God's word. The people were disgusted by those who would proclaim truth. So disgusted that they had them killed. Now we come to our text and we have Ahab, we have Jezebel, we have the 450 prophets of Baal, and we have the 400 prophets of the groves. And these were all very active. And they represent the powers of hell. Oh, how these people needed the fire of God to fall. Thirdly, it was a time of great indecision. When the people came together to Mount Carmel, the first thing that Elijah says to them is, how long halt ye between two opinions? How long are you going to continue to hold on to Baal and try to hold on to God at the same time? How long are you going to do this? That's the very first question he asked them. Keep in mind that most of the people were wavering between God and Baal. You remember before and even when the children of Israel went into the land of Canaan, God instructed them that they were not to take on the customs, they were not to take on the culture of the surrounding nations. But Israel, influenced by the nations around them rather than influencing the nations, they had a long history of vacillating between worshiping God and the false gods of Baal and Molech and Ashtoreth. You see, the children of Israel, they wanted God to be their help when they needed Him. But the rest of the time, they wanted to enjoy the prosperity of the culture. The rest of the time, they wanted to enjoy the pleasures of an ungodly and wicked culture. The rest of the time, they wanted to enjoy the possessions. They wanted to enjoy the world. They had a divided allegiance. 7,000 that did not bow to Baal. On the one hand, the children of Israel, they enjoyed their name as God's people. But on the other hand, they loved the sensual. They loved the fleshly appeal of Baal worship. They did not want to give up God entirely. Sadly, they did not want to give up Baal entirely. So what did they do? They tried to fit both into their lives. They tried to fit both into their lives. And just like today, there are those who bow and serve, and it's the majority. And I'm not just talking about the lost world. We don't expect any different from them. I'm talking about those who profess salvation. They bow and they serve the gods of self. They bow and they serve the gods of materialism. They bow and serve the gods of recreation. They bow and serve the gods of pleasure. They are driven by the same mentality that drives the wicked world. And that's the majority. That's the majority today. They are wavering between Christ. And again, I'm talking about, we're talking about those who profess the Lord. They waver between Christ and the world. They waver between God and mammon. They waver between light and darkness. They waver between truth and half error and error. In other words, they bring Christ and the world together. They bring God and mammon together. They bring light and darkness together. They bring truth and error together. And in their minds, they have created a gray area. That's where we are today. That's where the children of Israel were. They were half-hearted. They were undecided. They were torn between two contrasting ideas. And there are some sitting here right now. You are torn between two contrasting ideas. You are torn between two opposing philosophies. You are torn between two ways of thinking. This people needed the fire of God to fall. You know what they were doing? They were hopping on one foot. You're not going to get very far. Spending your life hopping on one foot. But that is a good picture of the undecided. That is a good picture of those who waver between Baal and God. So it was a time of indecision. It was also a time of neglect and forsaking of that which mattered. We read in verse 30 that the altar of the Lord that was broken down. The altar of God had been broken down. The altar of God is the place of confession. It's the place of contrition. It's the place where the people would meet with God. And the altar of God had been broken down. Through neglect, it was broken down. The altar of God was a place of prayer. It was a place of fellowship with God. You know, it's amazing today. Everybody here would agree, we live in the last days. We live in terribly wicked times. But you wouldn't know that by attendance in prayer band. You wouldn't know it by that. Well, you don't understand. Our days are short. Our Sunday afternoons are short. We got to do this. We got to do that. I know. Got to watch this sporting event. Got to watch this one. But oh, we're in the last days. It seems to me, if we really realize that prayer band would be full. It would be full. But it's not. In fact, there's a very, 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 very small percentage. Because people do not see the urgency of the matter. Because the altars of the Lord are being broken down. The altar of God was a place of fellowship. It was a place of sacrifice. It was a place of consecration. It was a place where the child of God would yield themselves to God and surrender themselves to God. It was a place of worship. It was a place of praise. And the altars were broken down. That's where they were. That's the condition that they were in. It was also a time of famine. And the famine resulted from all of these things that we've just mentioned. By the time we get to our text, there had been no dew nor rain for 3.5 years. In fact, verse 2 says that there was a sore famine in Samaria. That is, it was a very severe famine. It was very painful. It was agonizing. It was excruciating. It was a matter of life and death. There was a famine in the land Crops, no doubt, had died, and many crops were still dying in the field. Much livestock had died, and much livestock was still dying. Wells had dried up, and wells were continuing to dry up. Brooks and rivers had dried up, and they were continuing to dry up. People had died, and people were continuing to die, all as a result of a famine in the land. So it was a time of great grief. It was a time of sorrow. It was a time of poverty. It was a time of great loss. And I believe it was a time of hopelessness. For 3.5 years, no dew or rain, and people would begin to get hopeless. It was a time of great futility. Time of great restlessness. And you picture all of those people standing around Mount Carmel. And I believe if you were to look on their faces would tell the story of the condition of the times. As you looked upon their faces, no doubt you would see those who were very uneasy. You would see sadness. No doubt as you looked upon their faces, you would see much stress. You would see worry. You would see confusion. And I believe if you looked real close, perhaps you would even see some anger on the faces of these Israelites. And you would see a people who were weak. And you would see a people who were frail. And you would see a people that were diseased, struggling to make it, struggling to survive. You would see a people who could not go on much longer. Here was a people that desperately needed what we read in verse 38. Verse 38, then the fire of the Lord fell. Notice the very first word of verse 38. Then. It doesn't just say, the fire of the Lord fell. That's not what it says. It says, then. Then the fire of the Lord fell. The word then speaks of an order of events. So there were some things that transpired before the fire of the Lord fell. And we want to look at those things because this tells us when the fire of the Lord fell. Because this is a great need that we have today for the fire of God to fall. We want to notice 7 things that happened before the fire of God fell. First of all, there was a putting the blame in the right place. Again, remember that Ahab accused Elijah. He said, you're the one that troubles Israel. You're the cause of this famine. You're the reason. You're the problem. And Elijah said, no, I'm not the problem. I'm not the one that has caused this famine. But Ahab, it's your sin and the sin of your fathers that have brought this famine upon the land. And then when the people gathered to Mount Carmel, Elijah looked at them and he said, how long are you going to continue to waver between God and Baal? What he's saying is, for 3.5 years, no rain has fallen. Much of your cattle is dead or dying. Your fields are parched. Your land is covered with dust. How much longer are you going to continue wavering between God and Baal? How bad does it have to get for you to make up your mind, is what he's saying. What he's saying is, look at yourselves. Look all around you. You're wavering between God and Baal, and it's not working. You're miserable. How long are you going to continue between God and Baal? And today, if the spiritual reigns have ceased, and as a result, you are living in a spiritual wasteland, a barren and desolate land, where joy and peace and assurance and the strength and the power and fellowship with God and the passion and the desire for God is in a state of erosion. If that's your situation today, put the blame where it belongs. Your sin. Your sin. Your association with Baal. Your association with the false gods of the world. We see also, secondly, that there was a repairing of the altar. We read in the last part of verse 30 that he repaired the altar of the Lord that was broken down. Verse 31 and part of verse 32 gives the details of that. And if there has been a breakdown in confession of sin, if there has been a breakdown in contrition, if there has been a breakdown with meeting with God, if there has been a breakdown in consecration and surrender and prayer and fellowship and praise and worship, you have an altar that needs to be repaired. You have an altar that needs to be built again. Keep in mind, we're leading up to then the fire of the Lord fell. There was also a desire for that which was genuine. In verse 32, we see that Elijah dug a trench about the altar, great as would contain 2 measures of seed. That describes the width of the trench. And then we read that he drenched the altar with water. He drenched the wood with water. He drenched the sacrifice with water. And the water filled the trench. Elijah was removing all possibility of artificial fire. He wanted that which was genuine. He wanted that which was real. He was not interested in the artificial. He was not interested in the contrived. He was not interested in the pretentious. He wanted real fire. Then the fire of the Lord fell. Many today are not interested in what is genuine. They're not interested in genuine revival. They would rather have that which is artificial. Because if they have that which is artificial, they can continue on living their life like they want. But they put on a good show at the same time. Elijah wasn't interested in the artificial. Elijah was not interested in something that can be contrived. When he drenched that altar with water, when he drenched the wood, when he drenched the sacrifice, and the trench was filled with water, no one could say when that fire came down, that wasn't real fire. It was genuine. And I'm afraid today, we live in a time when there aren't many who want the real thing. They would rather contrive, work up religion than have the real thing. But we'll not see the fire of God fall until we want the real thing. Fourthly, he called on the people to make an investment. In verse 33 and verse 34, he called upon them to fill four barrels with water. To fill those four barrels with water would take a great amount of faith. And it would take a letting go. Think about it. 3.5 years, there has been no dew. 3.5 years, there has been no water, no rain. What is the most precious thing that they had at this time? What is the most necessary thing they had at this time? Water. Some will say, well, where did they get the water? I believe they brought it with them. I believe they were storing it all this time. They brought it with them as they made their way across the barren land. They brought it with them as they made their way across the wasteland. Water. Precious water. Now, I don't know. Perhaps it was the only water they had left. I don't know. But whatever. In a time of famine, water is precious. And he said, fill four barrels. And they filled four barrels. And then he poured it upon the altar, upon the wood, upon the sacrifice. And then he said, fill four more barrels. Well, now, Elijah, you're getting carried away. And they did. And they poured it out again. And then he said, pour four more barrels. 12 barrels of water in a time of famine. And they just poured it out. Now, if this is what they depended upon to quench their thirst on the way to Mount Carmel, what are they going to depend upon on their way back? They've poured out 12 barrels of water. What this showed was they were serious. It testified of their seriousness. We are willing to give that which is most precious, that which is most necessary. We're willing to give it all. We live in a time when there aren't many who are really serious about serving God. When preachers stand up and preach today, I'm talking about those who preach the truth, they know. They know that they are preaching to a handful of people. They know that they are preaching to a handful of people that are really serious about serving God. These people, when they poured that water out, they showed that they were serious. They were saying, we mean business, and we're willing to make an investment. How much today are you willing to invest in the spiritual? You think about that. You examine your heart. How much are you really willing to invest? Or is it more about the artificial, the contrived, the pretentious? How far are we willing to go? How much are we willing to invest? There was also a recognition of God. Again, we're leading up to then the fire of the Lord fell. We see in verse 36, he said, let it be known this day that thou art God in Israel, and that I am thy servant. So there was a recognition of God. There was a recognition of his position before God. We see also in verse 36, there was obedience to God. I have done all these things at thy word. So all of these things have been done. And then, verse 37, we have prayer. Hear me, O Lord, hear me, that this people that are halting between two opinions, these people who are serving Baal, these people who are entangled in this world, let it be known that thou art the Lord God, and that thou hast turned their heart back again. Elijah yearns. Elijah longs for and is eager for the presence of God. How eager are you today for the presence of God? He was eager for the intervention of God. When he was praying that God would send fire from the heavens, he was praying, Lord, intervene in this people's life. Disrupt their life. How earnest are we for God's intervention in our lives? I'm not talking about God's intervention in our problems. I'm talking about God's intervention in our daily lives, our daily routines. How many people want to pray for God to interrupt my life? Send the fire down from heaven and interrupt my life. That fire manifested not only the presence of God, the intervention of God, but it also was a manifestation of the power of God. And this is what Elijah yearned for. And then we read, then the fire of the Lord fell. And then notice the very next word, and. It doesn't just say, then the fire of the Lord fell, period. No, something happened after the fire of the Lord fell. And. There was an immediate impact. The fire of God fell. And there was an immediate impact. Notice verse 38, there was an immediate impact upon the sacrifice. The sacrifice was consumed. There was an immediate impact upon the wood. There was an immediate impact upon the stones. There was an immediate impact upon the dust. There was an immediate impact upon the water that was in the trench. The fire of the Lord fell, and there was an impact. And everyone could see it. But more importantly, there was an impact upon the people. We see that in verse 39 and verse 40. Then the fire of the Lord fell, and when all the people saw it, they fell on their faces. This is the same people. When Elijah said, how long halt ye between two opinions? They stood there in silence. They had no response. But now the fire of the Lord falls. And immediately, without even thinking about it, the people fell on their faces. And they said, the Lord, He is the God. No one is crying out to Baal. The Lord, He is the God. The Lord, He is the God. So you have this half-hearted, undecided people. The fire of the Lord fell, and they fall to the ground. Their hearts were changed. Their minds were changed. Their wills were changed. Their lives were changed. Their cold and callous hearts, they were made warm and they were made tender. That which was unresponsive is now responsive. Why? Because the fire of the Lord fell. But keep in mind what was done before the fire of the Lord fell. Because a lot of people today, oh, we would love that. We would love for the fire of the Lord to fall. But they're not willing to do a single one of the things that was done before it fell. So there's an order here. This people were changed. They were changed. And they went home different that day. They went home with a different attitude. They went home and they lived their lives differently. They were changed. And then notice verse 40. Elijah said unto them, take the prophets of Baal, 450 of them, let not one of them escape. And they took them, and Elijah brought them down to the brook Kishon and slew them there. You know what that testifies? There was no middle ground. Well, Elijah, I kind of, this prophet of Baal here, I've become a friend with him. Yeah, that's the problem. And they were slain. There was now no middle ground. They were decidedly on the Lord's side. You know, when Elijah asked them that question, how long halt ye between two opinions? They really were decidedly on the side of Baal then. But now they're decidedly on the side of the Lord. We need some people today who want genuine spirituality. Nothing artificial. Nothing contrived. Nothing pretentious. Just genuine spirituality. Genuine closeness to God. The artificial will not help you. If you have an artificial, a pretentious closeness to God, that will not help you. You need what is genuine. And we need to get serious. We need to be willing to invest all in genuine spirituality. Invest it all. What are you willing to invest? How much time are you willing to give? You see, most people, they put the spiritual in one compartment, they put the world in another, and never do those two compartments ever interfere with one another. I have my compartment for Sunday morning, Sunday night, and Wednesday. And then the rest of the week, I have this compartment. That's what people do. We need to be serious. We need to be willing to invest everything in a genuine spirituality. A genuine revival. People talk about revival all the time. The problem is hardly anybody even knows what a revival is. And those who have some idea, they don't really want it. How much are you willing to invest? How long halts you between two opinions? How much worse does it have to get? How much do you have to lose before you finally say, you know what? This isn't working. I need to turn to God. How long halts ye between two opinions? Going through life hopping on one foot. You're not going to get very far that way. You're not going to get through many obstacles that way. But that's the way most are going through life. Hopping on one foot. Halting between two opinions. Just like a bird. Land on one branch for a few seconds. Go to the next. That's God's people today. Oh, we need the fire of the Lord to fall. And to consume. And to consume. To consume the sin that's in my life. To consume the sin that's in the homes. To consume the sin that's in the churches. We need the fire of God to fall.
and people will see it. I mean, this is something when it happens, you can't say, you know, I didn't see that. You'll see it. It'll have an impact. Oh, I just wish that those who are the pretenders, that you just stop pretending. I'll be honest. I'd rather you stand up and say, Brother Dan, I have every intention of serving Baal. Don't bother me anymore. I'm going to serve Baal rather than trying to do both. And isn't that what Elijah said? He said, serve one or the other. We need to know. We need to know who's on the side of God and who's on the side of Baal. We need to know that. Because we are in a battle against the powers of hell, and we need to know who's serious and who's willing to make that investment. Are you willing to invest in your home? Are you willing to invest in your church? Are you willing to invest in your own life? Are you willing to invest in future generations by surrendering yourself to God? How willing are you to invest today in the spiritual? Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us in a verse of song.